Nice to see you. Hey, Jack.
Love
I'll do it around the table. Hi, Jack. Hey, nice to meet you.
Jack.
How you doing?
Jack,
how you doing?
I'm Frankie.
Hey, Frankie, Jack.
Hi, I'm Caitlin.
Hey, Caitlin.
Hi, Jack, Debbie.
Hi, guys.
Well, how are you?
I'm all right, actually. Having a nice day. It's always fun talking about something you actually enjoy talking about.
Well, I'm going to say something that every classic film fan that I know within the TCM realm is going to hate me for. But with the script that you have and your performance, I will watch you over Charlton Heston any day of the week.
Well, if this is how the rest of the day is going to go,
stop. It's as if this role was tailor-made for you, given your lineage, given your upbringing on the side of both your parents. But the youthful exuberance that you bring to Judah Ben-Hur, we see and feel the brotherly love and his transformation as he hits rock bottom and then pulls himself
up. Yeah, yeah. Well, it's really interesting because I, you know, I'm someone who loved the 59 version and I know the family, funny enough, very well. And that, while being a story about revenge, this is and Charlton Heston approached Robin a much more sort of manly way. Mm-hmm. Like when you first find him, it was the rivalry was already there, and it turned into the revenge story. This, which was so lovely, is when I got the script, I read it and I was like, oh, it's completely been reimagined, and it's taken back that actually I found the character in the beginning is sort of a lost boy. Mm-hmm. And through circumstance and the betrayal and the rest of it, he sort of does exactly do that, hits rock bottom, and you see such a transformation right through to the end. And also you're given this really lovely backstory of that these two brothers loved each other in such a strong way. You actually see that backstory between the two of us, and it's great because Toby's such a great actor and like a really good friend, so we really worked on that. We wanted that because that's in a sense got to carry you all the way through to the end of the movie. So yeah, it was, you know, you look for great characters. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a better one. And if, as an actor, you want to go on a journey, and this takes you there. Like, whatever you say, you can't not go there for this role. And it's like, you know, that's sort of the best part about the job, is when you find something which you feel you can fully immerse yourself in every way and actually go on a journey of self-exploration yourself. And I felt like that was what happened.
Did the your family history, did you ever feel that while you were performing in Cinecittà in Italy? I mean, your grandfather shot the Bible.
Yeah, he
for
did.
God's sakes.
Yeah. That's it. 7 years after this one. It was, yeah, I mean, that's a, what a place. I mean, when you find out you're playing Judah Ben-Hur, that's a pretty special day. But then you find out where you're going to be shooting it too. That was, and that really is special to me because, you know, you feel the history at every turn in that studio. Like, it hasn't changed much. It's like you're on the sound stages, you know who filmed on these sound stages. You know the actors, the titans who are there before you. And in a way, that sort of carries you through each day because, you know, this was a brutal shoot. Like, we really went there with it. And I wouldn't have had it any other way, but it's always nice when you sort of feel like one's ancestors and sort of like the greater sense of ancestors. I'm talking about all those people in a sense are sort of watching down on you. And it was, and by the way, you know, the great thing was we shot it there that, like, my makeup guy, Luigi Ricchetti, his father worked on the original Ben-Hur. His first film set he ever went on to, well, not the original, the 59 version, was that Ben-Hur. It was the first film set he ever went on to. There were lots of guys from the crew who had been a part of that. And it's like, that's such a cool thing because it was such an homage to the great book and to the idea and that we're bringing it to a new audience. So, you know, it was a very special time.
Of course, I got to ask you about the famous scene, the chariot race.
Yeah.
How much was that with you? How much was that with the stunt double? Was there injuries? That's me.
That's amazing. As you're talking about the famous scene, apparently we were in the movie together.
Yes, I was there.
There we are.
You.
It was.
Was a training last?
A lot of training, exactly. You know it now. It was insane. It was amazing. We were very aware that, you know, even people who haven't seen Ben-Hur can sometimes identify that it's the movie that has the amazing chariot race in. Yeah. You know, it's like, whether you've seen it or not, that's it. And today, for a modern audience who is so, I'd say, bogged down almost by so much effects and so much CGI, what Timur, our wonderful director, did was, he's quite an effects-driven director in the past, has been. He said, you know what, I'm going to trick them all. let's do it. Let's really do everything for real. We had no green screen or blue screen in that arena. Everything, it was built to scale. And every time you see us with those horses, that was us with those horses, which was a rigorous training, like, sort of regime, which me and Toby both had to go through for months before we actually started filming. But it was all the better for it because, you know, you really want the audience to go with you on this ride. And the way you want to do that is if they are feeling everything you're feeling. And if we were in a studio or faking any of that, I think it would have read instantly. And, you know, the difference of actually being with those horses, which is incomparable to anything I've ever done, it was a very special, amazingly sort of almost like a meditation when you were on those horses, because it is very dangerous and you have to be very aware of what you're doing, because it's not just you have to worry about. You've got, you know, another 28 horses running around with you, and chariots which weigh like over, I think, 1200 pounds, some insane amount. They're very dangerous. But you only focus on the job at hand. So for those brief moments, you are completely immersed within the race and within the chariot scene. So it's that lovely thing where your brain isn't telling you, oh, you should have done this better, you should have done that. You're completely focused. And it's, you know, we shot for 6 weeks with first unit, 5 weeks with second unit, close to 3 months, just the chariot race, which they managed to take down to 10, 12 minutes of film. So you can imagine how much went into it. It's, yeah, it's crazy.
So, Jack, we have established two things. A, that I love you. So there's that. We talked about it before you got in here. But I want to know, in real life, when is the time that you really beat the odds? And you didn't think, you know, the odds were not in your favor and you came out succeeding?
God, good question. I'd say, you know what? This job is a funny one. I mean,
yeah.
People say, you know, I took a jump before I actually got Boardwalk Empire, where I was about to leave the business because I was sort of a little disenchanted with everything, that I was going up for roles that I didn't feel any relation to, but I was doing it to work. And by that, you sort of maybe fall a bit out of love with what you do. And I've always been someone who loves what I do in every sort of aspect of life. But then I got sent a really interesting script with a role that they didn't send. They wanted me to read another role, and I read that one. I was like, you know what, I'll take a shot. And it was the first time I got cast off a tape, and I just shot it and went and filmed it myself and sent it into them, because I was like, I'll take one last whack at this, because I didn't care about losing for the first time. So I think when you talk about overcoming things, I think it's overcoming your own fear of failure. And that was, I was always doing what I thought was the right thing to do rather than doing the things that I wanted to do. And that was the first time I think I probably, and that sort of relates into this, you know what I mean? Because it was actually part of the job, the moment where I actually started realizing that actually the parts, you're never going to be right for every role, but you should be focusing the roles that you are right for, at least, or the ones you believe in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's, I think it was a very good turning moment in my own brain of realizing, you know, also stay in love with what you do. I think love it as much as you possibly can, because I'm going to turn up to work every day excited and ready to do the work and really put it in there. And this movie, I can't tell you what a dream it was being out there, because it was the most collaborative group of people I've ever had the opportunity to work with. There was no bad idea. There was no never a moment that no, just do what you're told. It was a real moment of creation from every side. And that was very much led by Timo, who from the beginning I went for a meeting with, and he just said, tell me about it. And he just wrote notes. And that was it. He wanted everyone's opinion. And I was like, what a beautiful way of dealing with something like this. That, you know, sometimes it's right, sometimes it's wrong, but we got to hear it. We got to hear everything. And that was sort of a dream. And then two studios who couldn't have been more supportive. And, you know, taking a jump with me, I never thought I'd get this role. I was like, you're going to go for some massive movie star, you know. But I had the passion and love for it. And they were really sweet. And they actually, from that, and they've been a really sort of good partners throughout it, which is rare, you know, when you hear about this business, that you sort of have such a dream sort of time making something.
You mentioned kind of having this sort of brutal shooting schedule and the rigorous training that you had to go in with all the chariot races and the horses. How did you emerge from this sort of still beautiful and unscathed? Did you get hurt? Like, what was that actually
it was,
like? It looked real easy when you did it on screen.
Oh,
right?
My goodness. We were in Rome. I lost 30 pounds to do the slave part of this movie because, you know, in my eyes, I was like, 5 years in the galley of a slave ship, you're not going to be rippling with muscles. What you're going to be is just pure muscle and bone. Like, literally, because you're rowing all day and you're eating very little. So I was training twice a day. I've never been stronger, but I've also never been scared. I went down to 156 pounds.
Wow.
How did
you get down to that?
You know, once again, I had a lovely studio who really did understand that it's tough. And they gave me a wonderful chef in Rome who was there because they knew if you're in Rome, the land of the best food and drink in the world, if I was doing that, I might have a cheat day or two. So I had the most wonderful chef, Giuliano, who was just this gorgeous man, and he just was so, like, loved food and passionate about it. And all he had to do was cook me the most plain, boring crap in the nice way, in his words, not mine, because I thought he did a fantastic job of it because he made what would have been plain boring crap actually rather nice. But I mean, the poor guy was just like desperate to feed me pasta, which he never got the opportunity to do until the very end, which was amazing. But it was a lot of training, and but I've never been more clear. The clarity it gives you when you're sort of on this sort of, like, when I say health kick, it was amazing. They had nutritionists. We were taking amazing sort of natural supplements that help your body ease off when you're dropping a lot of weight over a rather short period of time. You have to take very, very careful of your body because it can actually be dangerous. But I was so well taken care of. And what it does is every time you think you can't do something, which happened a lot, because you'd wake up after sort of months of, you know, the slave ship and rowing every day, and sometimes you'd be like, I'm feeling broken, like I literally can't do it. And then you go to work and you do it, and it taught me a lot about how resilient we are as human beings and how we are so much more capable than we give ourselves credit for. Because a lot of the times when you're given the opportunity to sort of say no or I can't do it, thing like that, it's almost like a way out. And this was very much a constant test, which is sort of what the character was going through. So everything only complemented the other thing. So I was really, it put me in a very sort of emotional, you know, headspace. It was kind of amazing.
Hey, quickly, you mentioned the galleys, and I know that Timur had these rigged with pneumatics.
Yeah.
How did that? It's not like a lot of films where you would be rowing and everybody would be in tandem, but the pneumatics, you don't know when they're going to alter the tension or
They would, and I like hydraulics, pneumatics with the oars and everything. It was unbelievable. And that was the great thing, is it was actually kind of, because if you, in the book that Lew Wallace wrote, he writes the galley, you know, when he's a slave, all from Judah's point of view, which is true. It's not like what's going on outside, because all he's aware of is what's happening inside the galley, you know what I mean? So it's a very, we said it's almost like a horror movie, because this action's happening all around you, so it's much more about your senses, what you're hearing. And he's constantly looking through little things and hearing stuff. And that was what was so great, is you didn't need anything more than all this sound and this movement and things coming. And it was rough in there. I mean, I'll tell you what, that many men in loincloths, and they would stack us up, because it was like, all the research was, they would literally stack them on top of each other. So there was like three layers that would jump back up and down. And you were in very close proximity. And it was a funny story. I think the first day I got in there, and I'd been like working out like crazy. I'd gone down to 150 pounds. I walk in, and they put me next to the most rippling muscle sort of human being thing. And I was like, no, are you kidding? I can't be next to that guy. So they went and found the loveliest stuntman, Steve, who was the complete opposite. Couldn't have been more pale and pasty and skinny. And that was the next day. So I was like, that works. That's better. So it was a better one, but it was amazing. It was like the heat and the sweat and the grime and all the rest of it. It puts you. It was amazing. It was quite something. Everything was done very taken with a lot of care for the realism of it, which helps us, you know, as an actor. You sort of, as much as they can do to put you in that place, even if it's a rather brutal place, it helps.
Jack, what are some things in life
Last
that
question,
you think are worth getting revenge for?
I'm not a very vengeful person in natural life. I'm sort of like a bit of a pushover. And when I say I'm a bit of a lover, not a fighter. So I said, you know what? I'd say family, if something I would probably say. But you know what's great about this is, you know, like saying the 15th Avenger being a revenge story, this is such a relevant story for our time, because you look at the world and where the world is, and it's just so filled with so much fear and anger and hatred and stuff, that this, in a sense, you can be wrong, you know, you can have something done to you by the closest person in your life and somehow still find that the best path is forgiveness. When I say forgiveness, I'm talking about as a human. I'm not necessarily in any way religiously inclined. I'm a spiritual person, like I said, a lover. But I found the message behind that in today's world felt so poignant and so relevant, because this was written 130 years ago and it was based 2,000 years ago. And then you look at it and you look at the story and you realize that not much has changed actually in the world. And actually, I kind of want to put out a message of kindness and forgiveness and how we move on and forward rather than reverting back into this world. So, you know, of anger. And because I said it cripples you internally. And with Judah, you realize this moment he dropped the rock, and it's got nothing to do with anything. It's just the rock became, that wasn't even in the script. That was something that me and Timur came up with. He got whipped by a centurion, and I pick up this rock, and, you know, Jesus stops me from doing anything. But I said, I don't want to let go of this rock. And he said, don't. And then we were up at the crucifixion, and suddenly I was like, he was like, oh, let go of the rock. And we were like, oh, yeah, man, that's great. And it became a symbol, and it did, and it was amazing, because I'd been through it. I let go of it, and everything just sort of, like, got released, and it became that sort of symbol of this weight, this rock that's on all of us, and actually just releasing it. It's so freeing, and it's such a beautiful moment. So, you know, that was kind of special.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. That's so kind.